Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Commander Clash podcast, where the Commander Clash crew talks all things Commander. And this week, we are talking about cards that we totally underestimated. And oh boy, when you talk about spoilers every single day during spoiler season, there are definitely some cards that I've missed on, but I'm getting ahead of myself. We got a crew to introduce, kicking things off this week with Krim. Good morning, Krim. How's it going today?
Good morning. It goes quite all right. A lot of cards on here I've learned over the last season or two are way better than I gave them credit for.
Yeah, there's some interesting cards on here. I'm sure, Phil, you probably have some of those cards as well. How are you, Phil? Brewer's Kitchen.
Hey, all. Pretty good at underestimating cards and then getting beaten up by them.
That's the worst, right? When you trash a card and then someone beats
you
with it. Oh, and finally, Tomer, Budget Commander. How's it going today?
This is actually really tough for me because I'm never wrong on my first impressions. I'm just kidding. I just don't remember them.
Yeah, this must be tough.
It was really tough. I have the memory of a goldfish, so I had to ask Rodrigo, like, what are the things that I was wrong about? And he gave me a list. I'm like, oh, thank you. Yeah. So that thanks for Rodrigo.
Wow. Rodrigo gave you a pretty quick and packed list.
I mean, that's like every partner's dream, right? To have your significant other come up to me and be like, tell me everything I'm wrong about, please. I really would enjoy you.
It turns out he was really on that. It was really fast.
Anyway.
I don't know if it should be weird or not.
Anyway, before we get into the cards we totally underestimated, we got a couple of sponsors today. Our show is brought to you by Foil Armor. Do you have problems with your foils curling? Well, Foil Armor is the ultimate solution for flattening your foils. It's a two-way humidity pack that you simply put inside an airtight container with your cards, and Foil Armor will absorb and release moisture, making your cards completely flat. Put it back in your storage box to keep your cards flat forever, and you can head over to foilarmor.com and use the code MTGGoldfish to get 15% off. Today's show is also brought to you by Card Conduit, the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. If you ever get tired of the hassles of buy listing, you can skip them with Card Conduit. You can use their curated service where you send in as many cards as you want with a buy list value of a dollar or more and pay just a 5% service fee. And if you want to do a bit of work, you can use the sorted service where you list and sort your cards in advance and pay just a 2% fee. Either way, you're going to get a detailed report with the results and a fast payment once your order is processed. And you can even get another 10% off by heading over to cardconduit.com/MTGGoldfish. Card Conduit, it's the easiest way to sell your Magic cards. So thank you to Card Conduit and to Foil Armor for supporting the show. And now it's time for the comment of the week. So last week, we talked about the best or our favorite hidden commanders. And our top comment comes from Mo Juice, who says, Morgan is a hidden commander of the Goldfish crew, which I think is actually kind of true. Although,
true.
I don't know. We'll see what the future holds. Morgan might not be the hidden commander for too much longer, but we'll see. We'll see. Anyway, let's talk about some cards that we totally underestimated. And let's kick things off today with Phil. Phil, what's a card that you totally underestimated?
All right. I'll just start with the most recent one because I apparently got burned here. So Quantum Riddler. It's a 5 mana, 4/6 flying. When this creature enters, draw a card. As long as you have one of your cards in hand, if you would draw one or more cards, you draw that many plus one cards instead, and you can warp it for two. So you opened this at pre-release and thought, I checked the price, it was like $15. Thought, no way, this is like $2. And I put it up for $10, sold it right away. And now it's like $20. And to be honest,
25.
Why? Why? Wait, am I? So I didn't get beaten up by this yet, but I must have underestimated it.
It's kind of funny.
Does Standard drive prices anymore? Because like this is a popular one, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it sees some Standard play. I think the real reason, though, is Modern. This became like a sneaky Modern staple because a lot of ephemerate decks. So there's a lot of decks that are like, try to warp this and then ephemerate it, and you get the trigger twice and it keeps a big body.
Six.
So it's like, they call it like the new version of Scam or whatever. So I think that's why the price shot up so much, combined with like a little bit of Standard play and not a ton of Commander play. I'm actually curious what you guys think of this card in Commander, because I underestimated it because I thought the card wasn't that good, and it's really good in 60 card formats. Still not sure it's like that great in Commander, though. It seems fine, but like, I don't know. Like, is it a good Commander card?
I mean,
if you could ephemerate it, right?
Oh, yeah. Like, if you can blink it. Yeah. Like, if you have
but is that good enough for Modern? Wait, turn three, yeah. You flicker this?
Well, everything is banned, right? So you have all the elementals are banned. So you're kind of just like looking for anything that is good value to blink.
And there were already decks that were playing like Thalia, Ephemerate, Solitude. So they already just had the shells built. And they're like, I can just throw this big Sphinx in here and it draws me cards and it's kind of big. So we'll see if it actually sticks. Yeah. But it's kind of like the new hotness right after release. So where would you play this in Commander? Like, Blink deck seems pretty good.
I guess Blink decks, yeah.
I think
the main... Flyers? Oh, yeah, right. You're right. Sphinxes do exist.
Yeah,
Unesh like is a real commander. I've seen a lot of Sphinx decks, but legit, I feel like this is at home in like some kind of Brago deck, right? Like or any kind of Blink deck, as you had mentioned. That's the only place where I think it excels. Otherwise, it's kind of just okay.
Okay, well, at least that it
broken with Unesh, isn't it? Because you can warp it for two mana, get the like Factor Fiction mode, and then cast it again later, get the Factor Fiction. Ooh, I kind of want to build Sphinxes now.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on to our next one. Krim, you're next up. What do you got for us that you totally underestimated?
So, as Tomer brought up, you know, like, and you mentioned, there's a humbling moment when you ask your partner, right, to bring up something that you were wrong about, or that maybe you were in the wrong. And I did not believe in Amy Rose. I thought Amy Rose from the Sonic Secret Lair, 2 and red, white, haste, whenever Amy Rose attacks, attach up to 1 target equipment to her, then up to 1 other target attacking creature gets +X/+0 until end of turn, where X is Amy Rose's power. Now, usually any Voltron deck, I'm just like, okay, I only have to worry about one thing. Why would I ever care about you going wide? But the thing here is, what if the Voltron deck was able to go wide? And like because of that, Amy Rose will like in one turn, I think, smacked me for like 24 damage or something like ridiculous like that, right? Because all the first few turns, all you have to do is just set up with like, you know, Colossus Hammer and all these other things. And then when you swing and have another creature with you, Amy goes hard out of the command zone. Like she will actually crack you like pretty hard. And I just was not ready for that. I kind of just thought she was okay. Like, okay, whatever, you know. But, like, the fact is, I keep forgetting she has haste as well. And the haste really is pretty big about that, along with the free equip and pumping something else is just nuts.
I didn't even know this was a card.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't think I've ever read this full card before. So I totally underestimated it. Yeah.
So honestly, I underestimate every card. There's like Boros Commander, and it says something with equipment. It's like, okay, I don't know. I just stop reading.
Yeah. So, write that
if
off.
If it's good, I probably underestimated it.
It's funny because in my Discord recently, a longtime member asked me for suggestions on building an Amy deck that was like budget friendly, an intro deck for a friend getting into it because they're a fan of Sonic.
Pico Hammer.
And it has multiple hammers available to it, like strength testing hammers. But so the really cool thing is like you go, as you said, it's like go wide equipment. And there's a lot of like really big creatures, like creatures in Boros that want to be big. And Amy is such a really easy way of pumping them up. Like Swiftblade Vindicator, double spike trample, 2 mana.
Yeah.
So you give that, just give that +6/+6 or something. And oh boy, somebody's dead. Vincent Vengeful Atoner, once his power is 7 or greater, you pump it up with Amy. He just like deals that much damage to each other opponent. And it's just like, it kills people so fast. Like, yeah, it doesn't draw cards. It doesn't ramp, you know, like all those. And so a lot of people will just write it off, myself included. But like then you see Amy in action. She has haste. She immediately equips. She immediately swings. And like you have no board. And then suddenly somebody's dead.
Heaven forbid they have like a Kedis or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, and then you really amplify the damage across the table. Yep. That is just hilarious.
Extra combats.
Or recently Pain for All has been another like a banger.
So Tomer, I think of you as the equipment player at the table because you love Caldera. So I've seen you play a lot of equipment decks. Is this good enough just to jam in like a generic Boros equipment deck in the 99? Like it seems like it deals a lot of damage, but I haven't actually played with it yet. Like how good do you think it actually is?
It's probably good enough. But I I think she's like even more fun if you build around her, because then you could fill up with cards that scale up with power. So I mentioned like Vincent. I mentioned like anything that has like double strike obviously gets so much value. Knuckles, the Echidna, happens to have double strike, trample, haste. So you pair that up with Amy.
It seems seems like it could work with some of the Final Fantasy stuff. It reminds me like Cloud, the Commander precon one that like wants to equip equipments to it. Lightning likes to like get through a bunch of damage because it's got first strike and trample and lifelink. So I feel like there are a bunch of homes for this card. Yeah, I just haven't seen it because it's a secret lair card, but I'm going to have to try this card now because it actually seems pretty good.
After I got smacked that one turn for like 20 or so, I was like, maybe I'm going to put this in my Captain America deck. This card's kind of good. Because, again, it's just go wide equipments, which you don't normally like see.
People underestimate damage.
Wait, where do you go wide with this?
If you have, you have other bodies, creature. Right?
Well, you want another.
Okay, so go wide is
more. It's
two
not just Voltron.
With,
hey, wider than Voltron.
Go wider than one.
As it's an like Eden Enjoyer, it does matter.
All right, Tomer, why don't you hit us up with a card you totally underestimated?
All right, this is a hot take. I don't know if it's a hot take or if it's a lukewarm take. I don't know what it is anymore. We've lived in a weird meta. Swords to Plowshares is a card that I was initially very high on for a very long time. If people don't know, it's a white spell, instant one mana, exile a creature. Yeah, you know it. So then the Richard meta happened, right? And Richard, he got me off swords. I got Richard pilled, and I removed swords from all of my decks.
Oh my god!
And then I recently I added it back to my Cloud deck. I went mono white Cauldra, and I needed to put some more removal spells. And I put in swords, and then I started playing with swords. I'm like, man, this card is actually pretty good. Why did I take it out of all my decks? And now I put it back in all my decks.
I mean, it's true though. This is the one removal spell I never want to see, right? Because it's always like it's just one mana. It's so
reliable.
Cheap. It's so efficient, and it exiles. It doesn't give you a land. I love this card.
It's funny. Like there's a lot of times I'll have Generous Gift and I can't cast it and I die. And then then I look at the Swords of Plowshares in my hand and I'm like, heck yes, I have one mana up. This is great. I don't die. Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
We're so bad.
I think it's pretty good, you guys. I don't know. I underestimated this one for a couple of years.
I know
now.
We're laughing at Tomer, but I went through the same exact process of like I always used to play Swords, then I stopped playing it because Richard, like, he actually convinced me that it wasn't worth it, and then Krim convinced me it was good again by smacking me with some big creatures. I was like, dang, if I had a removal spell, this would be so much better. So then I started playing Sars, then I started playing it again. But yeah, I went through the same exact process.
I never changed my mind in the first place. It's still
and
good.
Phil, a day one believer.
And you know it's got to be good because, Phil, when we did that removal tier list a couple weeks ago, Phil gave everything
one of the
like
few
Fs, except for swords. He's like, play swords in every deck. Well, so
run
Phil
it.
Plays
okay,
it,
fair.
Yeah.
It's fair. The vegetable self-remover.
All right, let me move on to my first pick. And this one, I vividly remember on one of our podcasts, being the person that was like, I don't think this card's that good. And Tomer was like, no, it's really good. And I was like, no, it's not that good. And that card is Arena of Glory. So Arena of Glory, it's a land from Modern Horizons 3. It enters the battlefield tapped unless you control a mountain. It makes a red mana. And then you can pay a red and exert it to make two red mana. And if you spend that mana on a creature spell or creature spells, because you know, spend one mana on two different creatures, the creature gains haste until end of turn. So when this card was first spoiled, I didn't think it was bad. I just wasn't convinced it was that good. Because we have like Flamekin Village. We have Hall of the Bandit Lord. There's a few different lands that you can use to give your creature haste, and I was like, okay, this has to exert itself, so it's not going to untap the next turn. Is that actually better than just playing one of these other lands that, yeah, they're like a little bit worse up front, but they at least are going to untap the next turn? After playing with this card, though, this card is the truth. Now I play this in like every red deck, basically any deck that has mountains, even if it's like a three-color deck or a five-color deck. If I have mountains to let this come into play untapped, I'm probably going to have it. It's just like, it's good in literally every single deck, so I was way too low on this card, and now I think it's like literally one of the best lands in all of Commander, honestly. But what you guys think about Arena Glory?
You can split the double red up.
You can. Right? You can give two creatures haste. Yeah.
That's the one thing that I think is lost that people don't know you can do. You could split the two red up and then give two creatures haste.
And it turns out the exhaust thing just it would be better if your land untapped the next turn. But in reality, I can't really think of a game where that really cost me, right? Where I exerted this and then the next turn I was like, oh no, I'm one mana short from doing my thing, which was something I was really worried about when I first read the card. Like, is it going to throw everything off the next turn? But in practice, it doesn't really matter that much. And the power you get out of it is massive.
Any deck that has aggression. I just play this, right? If it's got aggression and red, if I want to turn things sideways, I'm playing this.
Yep. Yeah, it's just better than the other haste enablers because, like, it enters untapped, it taps for colors. So that's better than most of the other ones already.
Yeah.
And then it's just the fact that, like, haste now, like, it's more cost-effective now. Being more cost-effective the turn you want the haste is better than being more cost-effective in future turns, you know, like I think that's like a fundamental rule of Magic. It's like why fast mana is so good and everything, like a Chromox, for example, having the mana access now is worth, you know, the card disadvantage that will hurt you later on in the game potentially. I think it's the same thing with like the exhaust mechanic. Well,
this card in specific, because all the rest of the exhaust cards kind of suck.
Yeah, I mean, if the exhaust was good, then.
I opened a couple of Arena of Glories when the set came out, and I underestimated them, but I thought, why isn't this more expensive? More expensive because it's clearly the best haste enabler. But then I started playing it in every deck, and I'm kind of happy that I didn't sell them because they weren't as expensive before. And I'm to a point, so I play Omnath with a combo with tap. Put a land into play creatures, and I play all the ones that cost one green mana, and I'm pretty close to putting one for a colorless mana in there, or like two colorless, like the UFO, just so I can play Arena of Glory, so I can haste it in to combo off at instant speed. So I might rebuild my deck just because Arena of Glory gives me a chance to combo off on the same turn and play a way worse card. It's just so good.
It's so good. It's so good. Anyway, let's keep moving forward to our next pick. We're back to the top of the order. Phil, what's a card you underestimated?
All right, I underestimated this in spoiler season, although I didn't know what to think about it, but I was cautiously estimating it at medium, but low-key thinking it will probably suck, and it's the Aether Spark. To be fair, it's pretty hard to estimate a equipment planeswalker if we've never seen
one. Yeah.
I don't even know if we should read the full thing. It's an equipment and a planeswalker, and you plus it to put it onto something, and then when the equipped creature, this is the thing that I underestimated, when the equipped creature deals damage or combat damage, you put that many loyalty counters on there. I underestimated how quickly you get this up to 10. And I kind of forgot that you can't attack it if it's equipped. So it's kind of like a super enclosed engine equipment that you can tutor out, and it's like an artifact for 4 mana. It's so many things and just incremental value. It doesn't win the game or anything, but it's just, it plays super well. And I kind of thought it would just be insanely clunky.
I think when they spoiled this, I think I was pretty high on this just because at first it seemed weird, like you had mentioned, but like I really like how durable this card is in Commander, mm-hmm. right? Because then it kind of causes the table to have to spend two, like either a removal spell and swing, right? So it's like a removal spell and a combat. If they board wipe, that doesn't work because it still leaves behind the planeswalker. So it kind of puts the table in a funny situation. It's also quite... Believe it or not, it's a planeswalker that isn't very loud. It's not very like obvious in your face. Like it's good. It's good. No one's gonna say it's bad, but it's not enough to where it's like, I need to blow up everything and this person needs to go. So it's just kind of like its abilities don't jump in your face, and that's why usually people will sleep on it and leave you with it and then realize that's a big problem. Cause like you had mentioned, you can get to that -10 very quick.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's true, except when I play it on Clashed and suddenly Crim sounds the alarm. And I'm like, oh, my little guy.
I'm an enjoyer of it. I know, Tomer.
Yeah, I like this card a lot. This is another card that I was also like, I did not know how good it would be when it was first printed because there's so many variables. Like, it's an equipment planeswalker and it does so many weird things. But it plays much better than it looks or that I thought it looked. I thought it was just going to be good in equipment. Because it's an equipment card. Yay. But I think it can show up in other decks too. And it's just like a little colorless utility engine for basically any deck that likes swinging with relatively big creatures.
I kind of still mostly view it as an equipment card. I think it's really good in equipment because you can tutor it up and you have shenanigans for it. In a generic deck, it's okay. But I could be playing the One Ring in that slot. How many cards I could be drawing.
You can play both.
Play both. I think that's actually worth a try, though, is it not? Like in a generic aggro deck, I think it's really good. It sounds like it'd be good there, too.
I mean, I think it's fine. Yeah, I think it's probably fine. If you get a bunch of creatures that are attacking, I will just say I've seen games where this really pops off and looks like one of the most absurd cards I've printed in the last few years. But then I've also seen a couple of games where you get Wrath, it kind of sits on the battlefield. Without a creature, it doesn't really do anything. So I just still think it can be kind of super high ceiling and low floor just because any equipment you need a body on the battlefield. But I would say it's better than I gave it credit for during spoiler season because I was pretty meh on it, especially for 60 card formats, but for Commander too. So I think I underestimated it too. Well, let's move on to the next one. Crim, what do you got for us?
Well, this one is from Edge of Eternities and I think it's starting to finally pick up. And it's Terra Symbiosis, 2 and a green. Whenever you put one or more 1/1 counters on a creature you control, you draw that many cards. Do this only once. This card has done so much work between my Wolverine deck, my Black Panther deck, and it's just, you're just drawing cards all the time. This is so sweet with how everything puts counters out nowadays.
Except itself.
Sure, green. Except itself.
Oh, green.
This what is this card not nuts?
It is nuts, obviously it's nuts. Like, ugh, stupid.
Not a lot of people are high on the card yet.
All right. So I'm keeping an eye on this because I kind of want to buy it, and it's super popular, but it's not expensive. Well, I guess it's up to $4 now. Last time I checked, it was $3.50. I think
it's only a rare.
I need a finance with Phil series. Phil's so on top of card prices. I want the Phil finance segment. I think this card I underestimated because when you read it, when you put one or more counters on it, you draw that many cards. My brain goes to, how can I put so many counters on this where I can draw 7 cards at once and refill my hand? And then the more I saw it and the more I played with it, I was it's actually like a Phyrexian Arena, essentially, in a counter deck where you just put one counter and you're drawing one card every turn. And then you have the upside that, occasionally I have something that puts a bunch of counters and I refill my hand. So that's what really changed my thinking on it, was thinking of the floor is actually really high. Assuming you're a counter, if you throw this in a deck where you're not doing counter stuff, then it's not going to do anything. Yeah. But assuming you're doing counter things, the floor is really high. And then the ceiling is also scary high when you play some big X spell creature and just draw a card for each mana that you dumped into it.
Being able to do this once each turn is nice. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's also you can do it on your opponent's turn. If you're a +1/+1 counter deck, the first card I think about adding to a +1/+1 counter deck is Forgotten Ancient.
Not
whenever
Snake
anybody casts
Veil.
A spell.
Snake's
fine, I guess. But if your opponents are casting any spell and it's on their turn, then boom, you get a counter and I draw a card. And then you move all the counters from the Forgotten Ancient to something. And then you're I draw 6 cards. Blah, 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 blah.
Speaking of counter stuff, this is a little off topic. I don't even know if I rated this card for Commander, but Aboroid is actually kind of insane. That card is scary. There's been a few times where it just comes down and it gets so big. And that's a card I didn't really think of being that good during spoiler season. But that's the one of beginning a combat on your turn. You put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control where X is the creature's power, and it starts off as a 4-mana 1/3. But once you start doing counter shenanigans, my God, does that card snowball hard.
Edge of Eternities
counters crazy.
Yeah.
Edge of Eternity's brought a lot of cool 1-1 counter stuff, like value engines that help you when you have that giant creature, right? Because historically in Commander, no one really cares if a giant creature, because usually it's just like, all right, I'm going to bounce it, or I'll just kill it, right?
Yeah.
One last thing about Terra Symbiosis, or I guess just the concept. Seth called it a Phyrexian Arena, and should we do a podcast where we rank Phyrexian Arenas and talk about cards like this? Because there's so many cards that are like,
I love
Phyrexian
Arenas.
Like a Phyrexian Arena in this.
I don't know, I should rank Phyrexian Arenas F.
Yeah, let's do it.
Why? In its own category.
Yeah, the F tier could just be renamed Phyrexian Arena.
Yeah.
Like, from 10 to Phyrexian Arena, how would you rate this?
let us know in the comments if we should do a Phyrexian Arena podcast, because I'd be down for that. All right, Tomer, you're up. What do you got for us?
Okay, here's a card that I thought was going to be good, but then it turns out to be like my favorite red card, almost like top 5 of all time.
Wow.
Maybe top 2, top 3, top 3 at least. Okay. This is Return the Favor. It's a spree card. So it's double red as the base. It's an instant and it has spree, so you have to choose one or more additional costs. So it's always going to cost at least 3 mana because each mode is one additional generic. First mode, copy target instant spell, sorcery, spell, activated ability, or triggered ability. You may choose new targets for the copy. And then the other spree mode is another one generic. Change the target of target spell or ability with a single target. Now, you know me. I like my redirect abilities. I like my deflecting swats. I like my bolt bends. I like all those stuff. And I think Return the Favor is better than all of them, basically. Return the Favor just has so much flexibility. So the first mode, copying instant sorcery, activated ability, triggered ability. This is great for like sniping your opponent's good utility spells. So somebody fires off like a cultivate or something. You just get to copy the cultivate, whatever. You're like in red, you don't have access to a cultivate. It's fine. But if they do something more spicy, like a CK Restoration or something, then you're really gaming. But it can also copy activated abilities too. So this is actually like a rampant growth effect for your deck too. If you crack a fetch land, you can copy its activated ability with this, and then you ramp out another land. Triggered abilities too. So if you have a really cool triggered ability happening, you copy that as well. And then also the redirect ability. So it's protection from targeted removal, first and foremost. Sometimes you could do other cute things too, like somebody signing bloods, you redirected yourself. But like the best is if you could do both. Like somebody targets one of your things with a targeted removal spell, tries to counter your spell, and you have a fetch land or something like that. So you can like crack the fetch, hold priority, redirect, and also copy the fetch land. And I tried doing that against Krim one game. But he countered it again. But he like tried to counter something. I tried to copy Urza's Saga Robot and redirect the counter spell to like counter the counter. And then he had another counter spell. But it would have been really cool if it pulled off. And I pulled it off in other games where you could do like similar shenanigans. I love this card. It's so flexible. It's like never a dead card. It's so good. It's so good. It's so good. It's so good. I rest my case.
I got it, Mittens. Way better than I thought, especially since I thought these spree cards, there were some crazy ones like Final Showdown, where I thought, this is in every white deck now. And
oh, yeah.
Apparently not. Still don't know why.
That's good.
And then the Return to Favor, just, we've seen it so much from Toma, and it's always great, so I'm not going to argue with this.
Is this Red Cryptic Command?
Oh, my God.
It is Red Cryptic Command. It's better.
I feel like I might just totally underestimate redirect effects in general, because I just don't play them. Like very rarely in like high powered weeks I'll play a deflecting swap, but I just really don't play redirects. But then Tomer plays them, and sometimes they look insane. Like him just, like you said, copying like huge spells that your opponents spend a huge amount of mana on, and you being able to get the value out of it for like 3 mana instead of spending 7 mana or 8 mana or whatever.
Yeah.
It seems really powerful. So I don't know, maybe every time they come up, I say the same thing and I'm like, I'm going to start trying them, and then I forget and I never start trying them. But maybe this time I will actually start trying them.
I think I'm kind
of
there
with
you, Seth. I like Deflecting Swat because it's free. It doesn't cost any mana. But, like, it's hard to, like, when you go into deck building and you look at redirects, because it could be a counter spell. It could be a removal spell. It could be a ramp spell. It could be nothing. I could be holding this for all game and praying for you to literally cast anything useful, right? So, like, it's one of those things where I've seen Tomer pop off with it and do some really cool things with it. And then there's the games where it just does nothing, right? So it's too wide of a range. And so when it goes to deck building, it makes sense to me. Like, I usually just cut these.
I'm curious.
But honestly, I think this one's the best because it's flexible. Like, it's not just a redirect, right?
Yeah. But yeah, the fetch
what's
land.
What's the Dustmourne one be better?
So good. Mm-hmm.
If we were going to do redirect?
Oh, the Dustmourne one is
I like
also
that one. The unstable something.
Untimely malfunction. I know I can kill an artifact, right? Like, there's always an artifact.
If you have fetches. I think if you have fetches, return is actually very cool.
I like the malfunction, but I think this is even more flexible because it's copy a spell, redirect the spell, copy a triggered ability, copy an activated ability. Like, even if, like, somebody is, like, an Eternal Witness or something, and you're just like, I want to reroll too. Boop. You know, like, I don't think it will ever be a dead card.
But the thing here is also on cost, right? Untimely Malfunction is always going to be 2 mana. This becomes like 3, potentially 4, depending how you want to spree it, right?
Yeah.
You're right. Like, there's more applications for it. Maybe I just need to try it more because every time I always just cut it, and like, Untimely Malfunction is one that I've come to like say is the number 2 behind you know, like a deflecting swat, just because blowing up an artifact is real nice. Shutting off blockers is real nice. So I guess I just really like Untimely Malfunction.
I got to ask you, Tomer, so when you build a deck, I know you've talked about a little bit, you don't really think in slots as much as you used to when you had your list of like all the different effects, but like, how do you conceptualize these redirect effects when you're building a deck? Do you have like a redirect slot? Do you think of them as removal? Is it a counter spell? Like, or is it just like its own thing? Like, how do you think of them in deck building? Because I think that's where I get stuck. Kind of like Krim was saying, like, maybe it's so flexible and does so much that I'm not sure where to put it. So I just end up not playing at all.
If I'm like heavy red, I like having like maybe 2 redirect slots. But for Return the Favor, I don't even consider it like a slot anymore. I just consider it's just like,
it's a staple.
Good value.
You just play it.
It's a good value. Because it's not just a redirect. It's also a copy spell. It's also a copy ability. It's also, it does so much. So like, I just think of it as just like a really good utility card that I'm always like, the more I play it, the more happy I am with it.
I think you've convinced me to try this one. I'm not hyped for most of the redirects still, but I think maybe there's enough flexibility to give it a go at least.
I just keep forgetting about it and then say, oh, this is better than I expected. <That's fair. laughs>
All right, I got my next pick. And this one, I learned about the hard way at MagicCon Vegas this year. Unstoppable Slasher. So this is a card I think of as a standard card. Because it's standard play, but I actually think this card is legit way better than I thought in Commander. It's a 3-mana 2/3 zombie assassin with Death Touch. And when it deals combat damage to a player, they lose half their life rounded up. And when it dies, if it's got no counters on it, it returns to play with 2 stun counters on it. So a little bit of resilience to removal and sweepers there. Obviously, and still get exiled or whatever.
By swords.
So this card, by swords. Swords answers it nice and
sword
clean.
Stocks.
But this is a card. You've probably seen my Commander decks where I kind of like to dirtle around and draw a lot of cards. And this just coming down on turn 3, it might be the scariest 3-drop in all of Commander. Because normally when someone plays a 3-drop and you don't have a blocker, it's like, oh, that sucks. I'm going to take 3 damage or 4 damage. But this is just like, you're going to be down to, what, 18 or something after a single attack. It's absurd how much damage this does. And if you're just not set up for it, or you stumble a little bit, you don't have a blocker, you're dirtling too much, this is just an incredibly punishing card. So obviously, if you're zombies or assassin, it goes up even more in value. But I actually think if you're just like a black deck that's about killing people, like your goal is to be like being aggressive and attacking with creatures and stuff, I think you should just play this as a good card because it's just like such a ridiculously fast clock. And in Commander, you have 3 opponents. So odds are someone is going to be doing the me thing and dirtling around and just going to be losing half their life to this thing on turn 4. But have you guys played with this card at all?
Oh, yes. I love this card. This is one that I feel is overperformed, right? This card is so resilient. It's so much fun. And I mean, okay, well, except for the person you hit, probably. But, like, it felt There was one game though where I think I had this killed, and then somebody just kept Karn's bastioning and proliferating the stun counter on it. And, but like other than that, and those weird corner pocket situations, it's also death touch. No one wants to throw their commander like as a, oh crap, I need a blocker. I'm gonna just play my commander to feed it to the unstoppable slasher. So I don't know. More often than not, I see this like connect. I have it connect a lot more than you would think, right? And you're in a mono black deck where you're loaded with removal.
Yeah.
No.
I think it's like it's the scariest is like when you play this and somebody loses half their life and they're like, okay, then I play Wound Reflection or something. And then they're like,
oh yeah.
I lose half my life
there
and then end step, I just die.
Huh.
So I always fear that. I think this card's very strong. It's very strong. It's very good at killing people. My main fear about this is that it probably is like a huge aggro magnet. Like you say, like the biggest thing I'm scared of is like a turn three this. I would be worried about playing this on turn three just because then I'd be like the immediate arch enemy.
What's the assassin that's a 1/1 that kind of does this? Ebon Blade.
Oh, or Reaper, maybe.
There's two
the
of
morph
them.
Guy?
They're both three drops. One is from Onslaught.
From Battle Bond, right?
The other one's from Battle Bond, right? Both of those, the problem is they are not very resilient.
Brutus.
Yeah.
Right? They're not
resilient. This is good.
This version of it is nice.
I'm pretty sure the morph one also makes you lose half your life when you attack. So it's kind of like symmetrical.
Right.
Which makes it a little bit less good. Yeah. I don't know. I think Tomer's point is a good one. It is very scary. And in some ways, the combos make it even scarier, right? Where you're not just thinking, oh, I might take 20. You're thinking, I might literally just die. If they have one of these, like, Wound Reflection effects or Bloodletter of Aklazots, or there's a bunch of different ways that you can do that you just win with a single attack. So maybe it's, like, too scary, but I don't know. The combination of, like, Death Touch coming back when it dies and just being a very fast clock has really sold me on this card. And I'm, like, I don't care about creatures that just, like, deal a bunch of damage in Commander. They don't impress me. But this just deals so much damage for so little mana that it's even sold me on it.
Yeah, I am team Wound Reflection, by the way. Like when I'm running this, it's because I have those cards in the deck.
This is a tell. All right,
I am the problem.
Speaking of being the problem, Phil, you like being the problem. What do you think of this one?
I have to respect it. I kind of read it as a exclusively constructed card, or like 60 card format, or like. That's the thing, because I thought about it as a two player card. I estimated it correctly in two players, because I thought you can just block, but in Commander there's always somebody who can't block, and then you just crack him for 20 just because you can. So, like, oh, sorry, I gotta attack, right? So much value.
I gotta put my dowsing dagger.
Is it a coincidence that Seth underestimated this, and now it's like the guy who dirtles the whole game is like, somebody hit me with this. I think this card might be good.
Yeah, on second thought, yeah. anyway, let's move on to the next one. Phil, what do you got for us?
All right, I got a card that I kind of misread or misunderstood when I read it, and it's still hold back because of its mana cost or its colors. It is Maru Siegebreaker, 4/4 Death Touch Haste for mana, and this is the part that I kind of didn't read correctly, I guess. When this creature enters, exile up to one target creature you control, I guess other target creature, until this creature leaves the battlefield. So it's like a tribute was this old mechanic, I think. When it enters, exile something that you control until this leaves. And there's no split trigger, so if this leaves, you get it back. And then when it attacks, for each opponent, create a tapped token copy of the exiled thing. So I kind of didn't think about how this plays in Commander. It's kind of like super myriad. And the thing that I really, really underestimated is that you can just take your own commander, which this is Maru, so there's not too many ETB commanders there. I think somebody did this with a Tiamat or Niv-Mizzet Reborn, and then always created the ETB triggers when they attack with this. And this has haste and death touch 4/4. So I kind of didn't think. And then I removed this, and then they got another ETB. So I kind of thought of this as, why would I O-ring myself? But oh my God, this is so good if you can find a way to put it in your deck. It's still Madu, which...
That's kind of the challenge, is the colors. But I just now realized that it makes a copy for each opponent. I've never played against this card in Commander or within Commander. I've just seen it in Standard where it's like only one opponent anyway. So I just assumed it made a copy of it. That's actually wild. That's way better than... I haven't even played with it, and I'm underestimating it because it's way better than I thought just from reading it properly. What decks do you play it in, though?
Well, you could always play it in humans because, believe it or not, I always forget there's a human in here.
You have the martyr human sack.
Yeah, I play this in there, and it's so nice to get Thalia's lieutenant underneath it, right?
And then you get three.
Yeah, yeah.
This card probably is insane with sweet.
Yeah,
it's like if your deck wants Blade of Cells, this is just 10 times better. Because it's like Blade of Cells gives Myriad, but this is like Myriad that even the person you're attacking, you get a token, you get that ETB on. Myriad is like each other person that you're not attacking. And it's safer too, because like the Siegebreaker only exiles the thing. Mm-hmm. Like it won't ever permanently exile the thing. Either it's exiled because the Siegebreaker is on the battlefield, or it comes back because the Siegebreaker left the battlefield. That's it. Like, so you're never going to be like, oh, I'm going to lose the thing permanently or anything. So it's like protection for the thing you want a Blade of Cells or whatever to give Myriad to. So it's like super safe. It has Death Touch, it has haste. It's a good attacker. It comes out, it does the thing immediately. It's super mana efficient at what it's doing. Just like even getting like a Kassam Simulacrum or something under it. It's just like amazing
value. And then with
the Sodom,
you even get death triggers, right? Because it's sacrifice those tokens.
Card's so good.
I'm going to have to build around it. I almost feel like this should have been a legend. Would this be too
positive
if it was a legend?
I hate to say it.
People said, that's like when people ask, like, what's a creature you wish was a commander? The Thunder Chicken is now, like, a top one.
I could
see that. We got to do another episode of this.
Yeah, good pick. Krim, you're up. What do you got that you underestimated?
Okay. I think I played it on Clash as a commander, and I just found out through Seth that it's CDH viable, apparently, and it's Kefka Court Mage. So I think when we played this and when we did that Final Fantasy episode, I just built it. I was like, okay, well, I mean, I like drawing cards. I guess it's kind of cool. It kind of didn't read like it would play as well as it does. And I loved it so much after playing it that I built it like I just kept it. I fully kept the deck together. Mm-hmm. I didn't break it apart. I just like, you know what I mean? Like I love this deck as a commander. I didn't know. And then now I'm learning it's CDH viable. So maybe it's too good. And I severely underestimated how strong Kefka is because he's two in Grixis. Enters or attacks. Each player discards a card. Then you draw a card for each card type among cards discarded this way. And you can pay 8 to each opponent edicting a permanent of their choice, then transform Kefka. I'll be honest with you, that second ability is vanilla text. It's flavor text. The backside doesn't exist. It's just when it attacks or when you discard. That's what you care about. And like when I was able to like discard, I don't know, an enchantment creature, I drew 2, right? You get the whole, it's also just fun to play like in the arch enemy way where you truly get the whole pod involved because the pod will be like, hey, what are you discarding? I don't know. Just don't feed Krim. You know what I mean? Like, and so, but you don't want to, they don't want to tip their hands to each other. So then they just do, you start a little bit of madness and chaos at the table as well, right? So this card is just really, really fun as a commander, and it played way better than I thought it would.
It
feels like...
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, it feels like this is appropriately an arch villain. You know, it's like, you know, like how Sauron, when Sauron was released, I'm like, this is an arch villain commander, because Sauron was also ridiculous, and this is how, this feels kind of the same way too. It's just like, it's the Titan effect. ETB, aimed attack, like you're just getting ridiculous value. You're usually like making everybody discard like one each and then you draw like 3 cards. I see that as the average usually. So it's like a siphon mind effect. On enter, and attack. So if it has haste, if it has blink, and then, yeah, the 8 mana on top of that, like, it doesn't even have to be there, but the fact that it is there is also just amazing, right? Like, I don't think it's very rare for that actually to happen, but it doesn't matter. If that flip ability wasn't even there, the card would still just be like a 10 out of 10, in my opinion.
It's funny because the backside is actually really strong. When this was first previewed, I was like, oh, the backside, you flip it, you draw a huge amount of cards. And then I started playing with it, and I was like, you draw just as many cards with the front side and you don't spend any mana. Like, you just draw the cards anyway. It's very consistently, when I've played it, like, enters or attacks, probably discard one, draw three, I would say, has been, like, the average. Like, there's sometimes when the table tries to team up and, like, manage to get you to draw two, but, like, especially if you build around it a little bit, it's very consistent for this to just every turn be refilling your hand. So, yeah, I thought it was good, but it's way better than I thought it was.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rodrigo built it too, and this is probably one of the scariest commanders to see them go, like, turn one Sol Ring into Arcane Signet. You're like,
hey.
Oh no,
hey, oh,
oh no, this is gonna be a rough one.
Plus, you're emptying everyone else's hand, which makes it harder for them to interact with your game plan. So not just are you generating card advantage, it's like if you could siphon mind again and again and again, just like every single turn, which is it's so good.
And there's nothing scarier when you just see, like, when I play this and I just, like, discard an anger or a wonder, right?
Yeah.
Like, especially the anger, because then you just start
only getting
going
more powerful.
Yeah.
And then you kill it, and then it's like, okay, I'll get my ETV again. Who cares?
Yeah.
Ooh, all right. Back to you, Tomer. What do you got for us?
All right. So this card comes from New Capenna Commander set. And I feel like New Capenna Commander... I could just say the entire podcast, cards I totally underestimated, all of New Capenna Commander, just all the cards there, because it's just like a black hole in my memory. Like, I know the cards there exist, but, like, I cannot tell you what they are. And then you will show me a card from it, and I'll be like, this card is very good. And I forget about it the moment the card leaves my field of vision. And the same way with this card, that I it's in one of my decks, and every single time I see it, I'm just like, oh my god, this card is so gas. Where is it from? New Capenna. Okay, so this is Seize the Spotlight. It's a 3-mana red sorcery. Each opponent chooses Fame or Fortune. For each player who chose Fame, gain control of a creature that player controls until end of turn. Untap those creatures and they gain haste until end of turn. For each player who chose Fortune, you draw a card and you create a treasure token. If you have a sack outlet on the battlefield, it can be anyone. It could be just like a Lazatep Quarry. It could be a creature that can sacrifice anything. I swear to you, pay 3 mana and your opponents will all just say, you draw a card, make a treasure. So for 3 mana, draw 3 cards, make 3 treasures in mono red is very, very strong. It's in my card order list for that reason. But I was thinking about, like, just like throwing it into, like, basically other red decks, because, like, I've been noticing people just not give me the creatures anyway because they're afraid. They're like, what are they going to do?
Well, because you could drop a sack outlet or something.
Good.
Potentially.
Yes. Yeah. So, like, it's just almost, it's like 9 times out of 10, even without a sack outlet, it's just like, pay 3 mana, drop 3, make 3 treasures. I'm like, okay, cool. And then, like, if you might as well throw in, like, a Lazatep Quarry in your deck, right? Like, at that point, it's essentially free. And then sometimes you'll have the quarry out and... This card, same time better.
Is this card busted? I've never played this card, but, like, I mean, 3-mana draw 3 is where I want to be. I play Painful Truths, and if there's this really 3-mana draw 3 and you get 3 treasures for 3 mana, that's insane.
This is a card that has been
also good
climbing,
too,
right? Like climbing in
cards,
Tomer. I think this is a very good card. Much like Tomer, I'm happy you brought it up.
Oh, yeah. 680 now? What the heck?
Yeah, okay. People must be waking up to Seize the Spotlight.
Oh, my God.
I played it
when it was like
$1. And it is solid. I am a believer. Yeah. This card is so good, dude. Tomer is so right. The amount of times when you just get to draw 3 and make 3 treasures, dude, this is like Jeska's Will without actually having to like use a game changer slot. And I don't
know. If you draw 2 and make 2 treasures, I would still be happy with this. Like, that would still be good enough. Like, even if you get 1 creature, 2 treasures, 2 cards.
Yeah. And then it still threatens, like, worst case,
wait,
you have
do you choose
attack.
The creature for
you
each
do,
opponent?
Yeah.
Choose for each
yes.
Choose gain control of a creature. Yeah, so far...
It gets around Shroud and Hexproof, by the way, too, because you don't target, right?
Oh, right.
Yeah.
In control of creature.
So
somebody's, like, on a Voltron plan, like, you don't even have to have a sack outlet. They'll be like, I don't want you taking my creature and killing me a bit.
So whenever I see this card, I just always give them the card because I'm scared if they play this card, they gotta have something, right? So you're probably right. You can probably play this in a vacuum and... You're not taking my commander, sorry. you just get the treasure and the card.
I'm going to start playing it. I'm going to start jamming in all my red decks.
If I remember. I swear it's a black hole.
Speaking of the goldfish brain, yeah.
You mean, just a quick interjection there. Y'all remember when we wanted Bootlegger Stash banned? The outcry.
Mirkwood Bats.
At least Mirkwood Bats actually does something.
That is true. Yeah, at least it's
I remember Lithform Engine, people were saying this is broken.
I thought that
when
was
we,
an
when we previewed it, and I'm like,
I have another red card for you. And now I feel a little bit bad because it's going to be tough to follow up Tomer's excellent Seize the Spotlight pick. But this is a card that for me went from I didn't even care about it. I thought it was just draft chaff to a card that I played in specific decks to now. I think when we do stats at the end of the season, I would not be surprised if this is my number one most played red card of the entire season. And that card is Big Score. So Big Score is just a 4-mana common, so it's super cheap. It's an instant. It's an additional cost to cast it. You discard a card, then you draw 2 cards and you make 2 treasure tokens. And I think Big Score is actually just a red staple that you should play in literally any red deck. When I first started playing, I was like, oh, okay, it's for like decks where I need to get something in the graveyard to reanimate. Or maybe I'm a treasure deck. I'm Magda or something, or Vihan or whatever that Gold Waker guy is. Like, it's something he hears about treasures and this will make me treasures. But I've come to realize that this is just really effective ramp and card filtering. Like, technically you're not going up cards, but usually you're able to discard like a land that you don't need to get 2 new cards, and then you get 2 treasures that are left over on the battlefield, so it ramps you into your huge plays the following turns because you can store up those treasures. So I just play Big Score in like literally every deck now, but I want to bring it up because I think it's really good, and I'm also curious what you guys think. Like, am I off base? Is this card not as good as I think it is? Like, how often do you guys play Big Score in your red decks?
I don't know why.
Storm, I guess.
Yeah, like if you're a Storm deck, sure.
You gotta be like a full-on Spellslinger Storm. I'll play it in just like any red deck. I'll just jam it in there.
It is a good card. I think you're right. Like, I think you're right that it is a very solid card. It does a lot more than just draw 2, right? So,
yeah.
I like it, but for some odd reason, I just don't play it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe because I'm playing Seize the Spotlights and things like that, right?
I know. That's a horrible follow-up. Right?
So I see why it's awkward to bring this up after Tomer.
I defend Seth on this. Like, I've been putting Big Score in a lot of my decks. I don't put it in all my red decks, but like, because I do think, like, I don't know if it does enough just by itself, but as soon as you add synergies, it's really, really good. Like, I had it in Inti, for example, because it triggers Inti at instant speed, and then I have a full turn on my turn to use the impulse draw, and you can, like, discard not just anger, but like a Drown Yard Temple and stuff, and then for 3 mana, you instant speed ramp, and it's card advantage because you didn't have to spend a card on your ramp, which is really, really cool. And I run it in Melic because it's spell. It fills the graveyard for Melic. It's Spell Slinger, so it's an instant. I don't put in Clive. But, Seth, if you love this card, and I think you should love this card, you know what's really good?
What's really good?
Big Score. The Spotlight.
Return the Favor.
Ooh, it is. It's really good because you don't have to discard.
Copy effects.
Yeah.
Exactly. The copy suddenly becomes card advantage because the discard a card is part of the cost. And when you copy the spell, you're not copying the cost ability. So you don't have to. So if you copy, like, if you return the favor a Big Score, you just draw 2 cards and make 2 treasures for 3 mana.
Could we?
Maybe 4 if you copy, like, an activated ability, like a fetch land. I don't know.
I wonder if we could build a deck around that, where you just try to cast a Big Score and then, like, copy it and use the treasures and the cards you draw to copy it again and, like, draw your deck. That would be sick. I don't know if there's enough copying effects, though. That is a good point,
just, like,
though.
think about it. If you're holding up four mana to big score and you're going to do it at on your opponent's turn, that means you have mana up, right? So you could like wait until somebody cracks a fetch land or you hold up a fetch land. You're waiting for your big score and then you return the favor of the big score and you copy the fetch land or you copy some other spell that your opponents are doing, like a triggered ability that your opponents are doing, or redirect something while copying big score.
You got me on seize the spotlight. I'm going to play that for sure. Return the favor. Might be for next episode. We'll see. Anyway, I think that's all of our main round, but we got a couple minutes left. Let's do one lightning round. We can't go full in depth on these cards, but what's one more card that you underestimated and that you want to shout out for some reason? So Phil, let's go back to you to kick off a lightning round.
Yeah, this one's pretty probably lightning because everybody else probably saw it. I kind of didn't think about Tifa Lockhart just killing you every time they untap with it. It's so bad. Yeah. They have it as a commander. I see it in Brawl, but I'm sure it's the same, and it's probably even worse in Commander. I thought you can just chalk it, but then they become immense, fetch, or whatever. Richard played it on Clash, but Richard plays super conservative. If you play against a pot of people like me, you can just run it out. One turn after another, just one hit them.
Make him have it. Make him have it.
It is so good.
You just gotta hope you're not the one that the Tifa player wants to kill. That's your final.
Yeah, have trample already.
Just run faster than the rest of the opponents.
Give it trample. Yeah. So
that's
crazy.
That's a good pick. Krim, what do you got for lightning round?
Lightning round. I think this is a card that I underestimated, and I started just going all my decks. Now it's split up. I think this is such a sweet sweeper that I could turn into a one-sided effect, right? The amount of times where I just swing out and then destroy all untapped creatures or destroy all the tapped creatures and then not worry about a crackback, right? Like, this card is very versatile and allows me to keep my board. And as, you know, if you're an aggressive deck, you kind of want that and you still want to clear the problematic threats. So this is just a sweeper that is really, really efficient.
I've been blown out by this by Krim, so
by Krim.
I can
creature
mana, so yeah. I haven't played it yet, but it's a good reminder to play it. It's actually very good.
No one plays around it.
Creatures are really
no
good.
One think about it. I promise.
And it's just three mana. It's so cheap.
Yeah.
All right, Tomer, what do you got for our final round?
All right. The person who got me on this, by the way, was Niyetic. And then I mentioned it in passing last time. But it's Observe Stasis. It's the 4-mana blue flash enchantment aura. Enchanted a creature an opponent controls. When this aura enters, remove the enchanted creature from combat, then draw a card for each tapped creature its controller controls. And then enchanted creature loses all abilities and can't attack or block. It's like not a fog, but it removes one creature from combat. And it nerfs commanders really badly because, like, not only does the commander no longer do anything, but, like, it can't go back to the command zone to be recast. You have to actually kill it. And then on top of it, it's going to draw you a couple cards. So I think it's just, like, an easy thing to kind of just, like, slap into a lot of just blue decks.
Yeah.
Obviously better in, like, an Enchantress deck or whatever, but more synergy potential. But I think his baseline is just really, really strong. And Yannick got me onto this card, and I start playing it, and it is actually very, very good.
I can see that.
I believe in it. It's super solid. And it replaces, like, the drawing is so nice.
I'm scared of it.
Draw, like, two cards, three cards, maybe more.
I imagine there's times when you draw a whole bunch of cards, actually, potentially. And you shut down a commander. Yeah, that's another one I'm going to have to try. Well, all right, for my lightning round pick, this one also, I guess it's the Tomer cast today, because Tomer, it's you that taught me the power of the smoke bomb. This
smoke
is
bomb.
A card that I
no. He taught me the
bomb.
Power of the smoke.
Yeah, I just got to watch you struggling with the smoke. This is a card I literally did not rate at all. I did not consider that this card actually had any ramifications for any format. It's a 3-mana artifact with flash that gives all creatures shroud, but then you got to sack at the beginning of your upkeep, and when you do, you get to make something unblockable for them to turn. So I was like, why would I ever want to play this? But then Tomer, we had a recent game where you actually use this to fizzle a lethal Alpha Strike that was going to kill you. And it was one of the coolest things ever. And then I thought, well, maybe, like, there are a lot of things, equipment going on, creatures, pump spells, protection spells. There's actually a lot of things your opponents do that end up targeting a creature. And since this affects all creatures. You can use it to fizzle your opponent's effects, which is what you ended up doing in that game. So now I'm thinking maybe Smoke Bomb is actually kind of good, and I might have to try it in some decks. Plus, it just leads to a really funny moment, and you get to say Smoke Bomb and, like, laugh and run away.
Smoke Bomb! This Tech Against Evil Lockhart.
Keep around,
oh
though.
My God.
Like,
is there a way it's to a one, keep it's a one-shot, basically. Yeah.
It's a one-shot.
I mean, I guess you could reanimate it or, like, something.
Yeah, I have it in Tetsun because it's an artifact and it's utility and artifact. So I've had it there for, like, a year. I sang its praises and when we talked about Assassin's Creed, but I've never had an opportunity to actually show it. I think it's, like, it's not, like, insane or anything. It's narrow, but it's hilarious when it pulls off, you know? It's very funny.
I think Dressdown's the other one that's kind of like that I remember Richard using before. But you got to be in blue, but it just, like, you flash it in, all creatures lose their abilities for a turn, then you got to sack at the next end step. But yeah, I'm gonna start trying out some more effects like that. But Smoke Bomb. Anyway, that has been the Cards We Totally Underestimated podcast. Let us know in the comments if there's a card that you underestimated, or let us know how dumb we are for underestimating all these really good cards. Whatever you want to do, and we'll be back next week for another one. So until then, everyone, have an amazing week. And this is the crew signing out.